Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by The Isley Brothers, The Carpenters, The Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
This is Dmitry Samarov from Chicago, Illinois. And I love listening to Vish Khanna's Creative Control because whether he's talking to a favorite musician or actor of mine or someone I've never heard of, it's as if he's introducing me to a new friend. And the way things are going, couldn't you use a new friend? Listen now.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Alex Edkins is a talented songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and singer based in Toronto, Ontario. Originally from the Ottawa area, Edkins is best known as the lead singer and guitarist in the colossal noise rock band Metz, and he also plays in the band Lids. During the pandemic, Edkins went through his archive of songs that didn't quite fit anywhere else and endeavored to use any sudden downtime he might have had on his hands to flesh them out on his own. The result is a self-titled album by his solo band, Weird Nightmare, and it's out worldwide via Sub Pop Records on May 20th, 2022. Alex returned to this show to discuss things like the origin of Weird Nightmare and what distinguishes it from the work he's most associated with, collaborating with other musicians like Wintersleep's Lowell Campbell, Bully's Alicia Boniano, and Chad Van Galen, the Beatles and familiar faces, loving the mid-90s Halifax pop music explosion and indie rock, but really only playing in hardcore bands until now, how the songwriting process in Metz might evolve, what revisiting older songs taught him about himself, tour dates for Mets and Weird Nightmare, other future plans, and more. A part of the Entertainment One Network, with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, with additional support from Blackbird Music, a wonderful record store with locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta, and friendly staff who will happily help you with anything you need, really, any orders you want to make. Hey, what if you want to order the Weird Nightmare record? Well, go to blackbird.ca, see if they can't help you out. Plus, in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 687 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Alex Edkins of Weird Nightmare and Mets, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, Alex. How's it going?
It's going good. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for asking. Where in the world are you there?
I'm home in Toronto.
Ah, how are things for you in Toronto today? What is your day in Toronto shaping up to be like?
I'll tell you, it's a whole bunch of press.
Oh, you're doing a lot of interviews today.
Yeah, today.
Oh boy. Do you like that? Do you like the when they sometimes they do this to you? Because you're a busy person. You're in Mets, so you're flying all over the place these days again. But do you like it when it's like a concentrated amount of interviews? Is it exhausting?
Yeah, there's a limit for sure. And, you know, I don't want to make it sound like I'm doing this often, but once in a while we'll pack a day full of press and try to get it out of the way, I suppose. And
this makes me feel good. Yeah, this makes me feel great. I'm an obstacle.
Not you. Not you. You're special.
No, it's good. No, it's. I find sometimes when I'm talking to people, they'll say stuff like, I never thought of that before, which is nice to hear sometimes, because I think that's why you have conversations, to learn things. Do you find it helpful when you do an interview? Like, do you learn stuff about what you do?
What you mean to hear yourself talking about what you do and you like the process and stuff?
No, I was like, well, not to hear yourself per se. I mean, when people say, hey, I made an observation about you and your work, and it occurs to me that you've done this. And do you ever go like, oh, wow, I never thought of that in a million years. That's amazing. Maybe I was doing that. I don't know. Like, do you ever have those sort of revelations?
Yeah. I mean, it's an occasional thing. You kind of hope for that to happen, where someone has a different perspective on what you're doing, and it's not all so obvious. So yeah, that's the hope of an interview, I think, is for someone to bring something interesting from a different angle.
Yeah.
That, you know, yeah.
I'm putting pressure on myself now. Why did I bring this up?
You are.
It's a lot to live up to all of a sudden. Well, it's nice to have you back on the show. Let me say that. I feel no pressure. I feel like we're going to have a nice chat. Congratulations on this release. So it's Weird Nightmare is the name of the thing. That's I don't know. For some reason, I know he's on the record. When I hear Weird Nightmare, I can't help but think of Chad Van Galen. I don't know why. I just feel like all of his aesthetic is sort of a weird nightmare, you know? Like, that's how I think of it. But the narrative around this release is that some of these songs stretch back to 2013 or something like that, which is interesting. I think I see there's a certain amount of adamant language that this is not a pandemic record per se. It was just happened to have been made during this time. Is that right? Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, it's a bit of both. It was definitely something that was brewing for a long time, and I had decided that I was going to finish a lot of unfinished ideas and demos far before the pandemic hit. But of course, the pandemic, you know, allowed for it to get finished, because before that, you know, Mets would be on the road a lot, and finding the time or the energy was tough. So this was something that, okay, it's now or never kind of thing. It allowed me to focus on this thing that I'd been meaning to do for a long time. So in that way, the pandemic was great. And yeah, I mean, I think I was trying to avoid the idea that this was something that happened only because of the pandemic. It's a little bit more, it's bigger than that. It's a little bit more important than that to me. It's something that I've been hoping to do for a long time.
Yeah, I think where I was coming from with the name of the project, if you will, is this has been a weird nightmare. So I wondered if, does that name stretch back beyond the pandemic, or is that a pandemic product, Weird Nightmare?
Yeah, it might be. I mean, it's more of like a working title that, you know, I put on a folder of songs that ended up sticking. That's, you know, I like to think of it as my thoughts about going and doing something without my bandmates. The idea of doing something solo and putting your neck out like that was a bit of a nightmare, you know, something I had to overcome. And maybe a weird idea for me to do at this point, but there's also certainly the part about when and where I was recording. The album was Rehearsal Factory on Richmond Street in Toronto. And after homeschooling my son all day, I was more like his secretary, you know, as he did his online schooling, you know, just like, here's your apple slices and hey, here's your piece of paper. Right. After that, I would spend most nights at the Rehearsal Factory, RIP, but recording, you know, in there for hours and hours. And I was the only one in there in this huge, like, there wasn't a peep, you know, there was no one there. And it's usually a place that was bustling and loud and, you know, like maybe 50 other bands jamming down the hall. Anyway, so that certainly was strange and plays into the name, I think, as well.
I see. Now, there's a couple of things you said there that I want to touch upon. First of all, I think most of us who start playing music, on some level, we have to do stuff on our own to build up our chops. So we're kind of solo artists from the get-go, just trying to figure out our stuff. Have you ever been a solo public musician? I'm trying to think. Like, I know you, as you know, I mean, I think we first encountered each other in the context of Metz. I knew Chris from other bands. I knew Hayden from other bands. And I know, was it you and Hayden that would collaborate sometimes in Ottawa? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's Metz got started in Ottawa.
That's how you started, yeah.
With Hayden and me, yeah.
Yeah, so were you ever yourself as a public musician?
No. This is definitely a new thing, and I think it stems from just all of the recording and demoing and writing I was doing for Metz and starting to feel really good about it, you know, basically bringing songs that were fully realized to the fellas and them liking them and, you know, other people liking them, and said, okay, you know, I think I can do this. You know, it won't be the same, but it will be something that is from the heart and something that I like and feel good about. So yeah, it's just it took me this long to sort of have the confidence, I think.
Well, you have a very supportive band of brothers there, I would think. At least that seems that way to me. Was any of this stuff in Weird Nightmare stuff you had tried with Metz and thought, this isn't working?
Yeah, to be totally honest, there's a couple tunes that date way back that I think when I first was working on them, I thought they would be Metz songs. But the cool thing about Metz is that, you know, it really is the three of us that make this certain sound together, and those guys have a sound that's quite distinct, and it just doesn't always click. It's you know, as you know, Hayden's style of drumming is pretty singular.
Yes, absolutely.
It's like, yeah, he's like my favorite drummer in the world, and so if he sits down and plays to a song that I've written and it doesn't click, it just means it's not for that band. I can still like the song and I still think there's merits to it, but like, he's very much the engine of Metz, so there's no point in my mind in trying to stick him in a different box, because he's so important to our sound.
So do you play everything on this record? Drums, everything?
I play everything except for drums. I play drums in a couple small moments on the album. But no, Lowell Campbell from Winter Sleep plays drums, and he's sort of the, you know, we call it a solo album, but I've had a lot of people involved as well, a lot of help and a lot of things that came to pass that if they didn't, you know, if they didn't kind of sync up, the album wouldn't have happened. And certainly Lowell is probably the biggest one there. He was out on the East Coast during the pandemic and had a cottage out there and his drums and his mics. So I would do these songs with a drum machine and then I would send him the tracks. And because he's such a great musician, he was somehow able to like give the songs like this, you know, live feel and this kind of push and pull that quite honestly I was shocked to hear when he would send them back to me. So that was kind of an amazing thing that flukishly happened where he was down to do that. And that really our kind of strange method really worked in my opinion. You know, I love how it sounds.
No, it sounds great. That's nice that you really took an opportunity to branch out. I mean, I think, you know, I've been really obsessively reading about and watching things about the Beatles lately. For some strange reason, I don't know, they're just in the air. Maybe there was a documentary out a few months ago that I'm reading like a book. I'm just finishing a book by their engineer, Jeff Emmerich, and he engineered all of their stuff basically, except for when he had.
I've read that one.
Have you read that book? Here, There, and Everywhere?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, yeah. Man, he slags George Harrison in every chapter. Every chapter, he's just like, George can't play. And I was like, wow. But no, it's interesting when they went solo, like each of them would call upon, well, not Paul, but each of them would call upon Ringo or George, like John would call upon George and Ringo, even though they'd sort of branched out and had this sort of acrimonious breakup. Well, I guess the three of them were united, John, Ringo and George, and then Paul was the outlier. But it's always struck me that even as they broke up, like three of them would collaborate a lot. And so you probably could have been like, man, I need drums on this. Why wouldn't I just ask Hayden? I think it's nice that you were like, you know what? I'm going to take this somewhere else to see how it goes. And you got Lowell, arguably another, like one of the most distinctive and incredible drummers in this country. So that's great too. I mean, I'm just happy for you that you feel like you had this outlet. It's great.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and I mean, it's an honor to have him on the record. Same with a lot of the other guests, you know. But yeah, back to the Beatles. you know, Ringo's the vibe guy. They need him around. You can see in that latest movie, he brings the calm, he brings the cool, and I mean, obviously, amazing drummer.
Utterly unique drummer. I just think...
Yeah.
Well, I totally understand on a musical level and on a vibes level and a familiarity level. That's what Jeff Emmerich often says, is that when the Beatles did make solo things, they always wanted a familiar engineer or producer around. He often says that. They asked me to do a thing, I think, just because they wanted a familiar face around. It's interesting that you're in a... Do you want to cite some of the other people on the record, by the way? I assume they're friends, but it's interesting to me that you went somewhat unfamiliar on a musical dynamic.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of the point, right? Then, and the reason, it did cross my mind to ask Chris and Hayden to be on the record. And then I was kind of like, well, what's the point of that?
Yeah.
You know, as much as I love the way they play, the whole point was to not do that this time. So I got Alicia from a band called Bully to sing on a track called Wreck. And she just has one of those singular voices to me. It's like immediately, you know, it's Alicia. So I was really happy that she was down to do that. And I think, you know, it was one of the, you just follow your gut. And I was like, this song needs something. And I'm going to see if someone wants to sing on it. Another guest, Chad Van Galen. I just love his music. Have for the longest time and have so much respect for him. And, you know, we've run into each other over the years. And that one was just sort of like, tossing it out there into the universe, like, hey, you want to do this? And he obliged and played some crazy instruments, like, you know, Chinese mouth organ and santur and a solo, like a spot where someone would usually put a guitar solo. He decides to do that, and that's classic Chad.
Yeah, he was on the show not too long ago talking about all the sort of scavenging he's doing for instruments and making instruments, and he'll sometimes just text me photos with no caption of what he made. And I'm like, what is it? And I get no response. Like, he's like, it's a whatever. Like, he's so funny and inventive. So, no, it's lovely. That's lovely. I just think it's lovely. So You mentioned that, or I asked rather, if some of these songs didn't work in Metz, and you figured it out. You chalked it up mostly to Hayden and the feel that he brings to things, but there must be other things. Like, I will say, when the record starts, I believe it starts, I'm sorry, I have some notes in front of me. I try not to have notes in front of me, which is maybe bad, I don't know. Searching for You is the first song, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Searching for You, when it gets going, I'm like, oh, this is Metz-oriented. But then as the record goes, and this is my, by the way, I should clarify, my first impression in pressing play was like, oh, some of this, well, that's clearly Alex. Like, this is this is Metz-esque. But then as you spend more time with it, you're like, oh, this isn't, forget what you think. Forget what you're reading about. Listen to it, and you're like, oh, this isn't Metz. It's just not, it's not even, it's different somehow.
I'm glad you think so. Yeah, I think it's really different.
It is. I will say that after repeated listening, for sure, and me getting over the context, like if someone just slipped me this thing, I wouldn't know what it was on some level. So I think it's a context thing. Like, oh, the guy from Metz. Okay, this is clearly Metz-like. And then by the end of the record, you're like, this is nothing like Metz when you hear the final song. So for you, though, as the songwriter, as the person attacking these songs with your voice and your sort of lyrical approach, what distinguishes Weird Nightmare from Metz for you personally? I'm just curious.
I think, you know, it's funny because Searching for You, that was one of the newer songs. That started off as sort of like a T-Rex slow, very slow thing. And then I sped it up to make it feel comfortable for me. But for me, it was about embracing the hook. Like it was about connecting with the part of me that just loves pop music and loves simplistic songwriting. So it was sort of like not aesthetic first, not aggression or rhythms first. It was the song first. It was the hook, the melody. It's something I just decided that's going to be the thing on this record. So I wanted a big chorus in every song pretty much. I wanted it to be fun to listen to and easy to listen to. You know, I have my certain palette that I work with, and it's usually my production approach is, you know, distorted and then more distorted, and that's just what I love. But I did want it to be this thing that had repeat listen value and just maybe, you know, put a smile on someone's face because of the melodies and things, because that's what it did for me. It was like my happy place, you know, for lack of a better term.
Well, so I will, like I say, the distinct, for me, it's distinctive from Metz. But on the other hand, I always hear solid pop hooks in Metz. Like, yeah. That's the interesting thing about Metz to me, is that it is totally in the realm of noise rock. But you, when you break through the surface or whatever it is, the ocean of noise, whatever you want to call it, you seem to me to be a pop person. There's true. Always verses and verse, chorus, verse kind of stuff and bridges and those sort of things, I think, in Metz. I'm being a bit reductive. But so on the one hand, yeah, totally distinctive. Weird Nightmare is from Metz, but on the other, it's you. So you are a pop guy. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
Even in Metz, probably, it's fair to say, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I love the most. And this is me just going even further with it, or at least attempting to. To push that. And, you know, I listen to a wide range of music, obviously, and I love hardcore and punk. But I think, you know, I also grew up with some of that East Coast indie rock, and then that was pure popist stuff. The Inbreds and bands like that, or Eric's Trip and bands like that. That's pop music to me. It's got a lot more going on, but at the heart of it, you know, they're just writing simplistic, really well-written pop songs, like Flashing Lights or Thresh Hermit and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and that's kind of what I grew up on, a little bit adjacent to learning about underground punk and stuff. So it's all
hardcore.
Mixed in there. Yeah,
we're very similar, you and I, because that was my entry point too. It's interesting when I think on it, like the music I made when I first started playing music with my friends was all within the realm of hardcore punk. Pretty much, or some, when I was first playing with Steve Lamke and Dallas Worley, Dallas wanted to play with a drum machine and a drummer. So it was me and a drum machine. So very noisy and strange and cacophonous. But we all like listened to different things. Like Steve and I were maybe the most aligned, like Merge Records, Superchunk, and stuff like that. But they did not really go for my East Coast stuff. So it's interesting. Like I totally was a pop guy, but playing in like hardcore punk bands. I feel like maybe you were the same. Like you never really explored your love of pop in a live setting, I'm guessing, like as a, in
exactly.
a band?
Or even yeah. really recorded.
Yeah.
But you know, if you were to go through my record collection, it's a huge amount of it is, you know, 60s garage and beat music, you know, the British Invasion and stuff. And then sort of indie rock, I guess, or like, you know, the Flying yeah. Nun stuff and all, you know, the deal. So it's just, and that's just pure pop music and I love it. Well, and that's what I wanted to do here.
I used to, before there was YouTube, I was YouTube in my neighborhood. So I would record every late night band. Like if a band was on late night TV, I would tape it. I still have them in the basement here in Edmonton, all these VHS tapes that I have a VCR too. That's how old school I am. But anyway, I have a distinct memory of bringing, I was just telling Steve Lamke about this the other day. Steve and Dallas were at my house one night and I said, oh, we got to watch this. And I put it on and it was Pavement doing Stereo on Late Night with Conan O'Brien. And I think Steve was relatively tolerant of it, but Dallas did not like it at all. And I'm just, I'm not telling tales out of school. It's just, what do you think that, I just want your perspective on it. Cause I think about it sometimes. Why were we not chasing after, normally when you're into music, you, and you're making it for the first time, you kind of chase after the stuff you listen to the most. But I don't know that I was doing that. Like I listened to hardcore and punk, but it was just like something in my brain didn't go for it. Didn't try to play like the Super Friends. When yeah. I was at home, I would try to figure out their guitar parts. And I would try to figure out the drums with some of my friends. But when I was with Dallas and Steve, we went, I don't know how else to describe it. There was something aesthetically that we realized was more, or we decided maybe was more substantive or cool or something. And I don't know what it yeah. means. Like when you're finding yourself as a kid, you want to assert yourself and do something different. You don't want to copy people, I think. But yeah. at the same time, the magical feeling when you first get a, for me, the most magical moment for me on guitar was the first time I learned how to play Come As You Are by Nirvana.
Sure.
And I was like, oh, sure. that's how you do it? That's it? What the hell? And so, but
yeah, it's easy.
Yeah, but I didn't really go after that in my own pursuits. Do you have any perspective? Because you sound the same as me. You love that stuff, but you...
You know, it's hard to say because you were probably just, in some ways, going with the flow of, yeah. you know, what your friends wanted to do. And I think I did that too, and... And also, at that time, stuff like Pavement, it wasn't, maybe it was too...
hard to play, I think, actually.
Well, or too commercial for your maybe. Cool factor.
Maybe. No, but I love Pavement. No, but Pavement, or bands like Sonic Youth and Pavement were cool, but big, I think.
They were
like,
big.
If you went to go yeah. see them, you were around 1,000 people, like no doubt.
Yeah.
About
yeah,
it.
Yeah, totally.
So they were.
And the only hardcore band that could do that was Fugazi.
Yeah.
That
and
was,
I would and go see. Like, yeah. And I saw Fugazi for the first time in 95. And that changed my life too. Like, so, and they, but they curiously might be the bridge here because Fugazi are ostensibly mm-hmm. a pop band. Like they write hardcore and instrumental or rather interesting. I don't even know what you call them. They write interesting punk music from a pop aesthetic. Verses, choruses, yep. thoughtful, intricate guitar parts. Yeah, learning how to play their stuff was also illuminating. Like, just on the guitar, like, oh. Anyway, sorry, I'm getting into more of a zone of that discovery mode where you realize you can do stuff that you're, mm-hmm. the people you admire can do. I will say, some of those bands, they had chops that I didn't have. Like, I still don't have. Like, I can't do some of that stuff. So maybe it's an accessibility yeah. thing. Like, you could... You know what? I think I solved it. Because I don't know about you, but I also had my mind blown seeing like a Discord band play a Basement show in Guelph. Mm-hmm. In like 1996, mm-hmm. Blue Tip played Guelph and we were like, this band on Discord Records is playing like to 12 people? What the hell?
Yeah.
But that got...
I mean, that was my experience of coming up in a music scene. That was what it was. It was like 20 people
yeah.
and this... heroic band coming from who knows where to play for you and for no very little money and yeah. it was this truly magical thing that I don't think most people get to experience, so I feel lucky to experience it. You know what's funny about this record for me is that it's almost like, you know, you're talking about Pavement chops and Fugazi chops and stuff. This was in some way like reversing that. Like, I wanted to simplify. Like, I was you know, I think Metz was... It's by no means technical music, but it's quite involved physically. And, you know, I think we've created this type of language, at least for me on guitar and things, this way of playing. And I wanted to just try something so opposite from that. Yeah. So, you know, like, I think for the first time ever, I'm using traditional open chords and bar chords. And it's like, I was like, wow. You know, it's like how most people would feel finding like a weird Sonic Youth tuning or something. I was feeling that way by playing a D chord.
Right, right. Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, this is so liberating, because I have not done it for 10 years because Metz is such a distinct animal. And I love that we have our own thing. And I feel like I have this, like, these chord structures that I have made my own, but this was like the best, just using power chord, you know. Yeah. Or like a traditional chord sequence, or even like a, like, just stuff like that just made me so happy. Yeah. And then of course when you do that, you get these, maybe they're obvious, but to me they're just simply rewarding, like these rewarding melodies that just come with it.
Yeah,
they just come along so easily. Yeah. Whereas with Metz, I'm using some kind of insane chord, and there's this bombastic beat and fuzzed out bass, and I'm trying to sneak somehow a melody into it.
Yeah.
Whereas with Weird Nightmare, it was like, well, the melody's right there. It's so obvious and it feels awesome. So I just went with that.
So does revisiting, like, as I said earlier, and I want to get to the fact that, am I correct? Like, some of these songs date back to 2013. Is that what I read?
Yeah.
Is that right? Okay. So I don't want to miss that point. But just based on what you're saying, does this experience in both revisiting and recording this material, do you see it potentially having any effect on how you would write for Metz now?
Well, I think we are all in a headspace where we want the band to grow, like, always, you know. And I feel like we achieved that on our last record, and we continue to go in new places. So I think it will absolutely do that. Like, it will absolutely affect what we will consider to be Metz music. Like,
okay, so but you haven't started that process with them, with new songs.
No, we've been working on new stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you feel
and
it?
So,
You feel a little tinge of what this experience has been like for you? Weird Nightmare. It's infiltrating Metz a little bit.
Honestly, it's hard to say. It's like, I think we were going that way anyway. But okay. When I say that way, I don't mean poppy. I just mean different.
Hey, guys, what about just an open D chord? Like, are you just like, what if we just did this? And then, like, the G, like, you know, like, almost back to folk guitar school or something like that.
Yeah.
So, like, it sounds like there's a possibility that that might happen if it hasn't already. Just like... why don't we go simple on this one? Like, we've got all our Metz songs. We've got 8 of our solid Metz songs, you know, the crazy bombastic ones. What if we just do one like this, you know? Like,
it's not impossible. I'll say that I think we're more open-minded now than ever. That's where I could leave it. You know, like, I don't know. And we never really know until it's recorded where it's going to go exactly, but... yeah, I think everyone's open for change.
Well, like, I alluded to the last song on the record, which is called Holding Out. And this is like Beach Boys shoegaze territory almost all of a sudden. And it's really out of nowhere. On some level, like, yeah, I don't see Metz making that kind of song, but why not? I feel like Metz in the punk spirit, you could do anything. Really, and if it makes sense, it makes sense. Okay, yeah, no, I'm just curious. I mean, I think as you do your litany of interviews, you're probably gonna run into this, people being like, "What? How does this work with Metz?" Because that's just our reference point. So sorry if it's lazy, but I think I think there's a connection there. So as I was saying, the songs date back to 2013. What does that mean exactly? Some of us start songs and then we don't finish them. And then we come back to them and finish them later. Maybe it could, cause sometimes it can take years. You do a little demo or something, or you write something down. So what state of completion were some of these songs in, both sonically and lyrically? Lyrically, I'm particularly curious about, because I know from my own experience, I'm sure you've had this too, if you put a song together in 2015 and you go back to it in 2018, you either really relate to that person, or you're like, who was I? What was going on in my life or in the zeitgeist that made me write this? Did you have those little revelations? Like, did you have any, I don't know who I was, or, wow, I was really onto something. Did you have those moments in revisiting some of these songs?
Well, when I'm recording, I usually lay down a drum machine track, a guitar track, and bass, and then scratch vocal. And sometimes the scratch vocal, you can just subconsciously you fluke on something. It comes, the words end up being the actual words. That has happened. For example, the song on this one that goes back that far, like Dark Room, is a very old song that I thought was going to be a Met song, but just never clicked. And that one, on what you hear on the album, is pretty much like first take run through with a drum machine. All those tracks were like done back then, and I recorded on top of them and added some things, and Graham Walsh put a synth on it, and so did Lowell. So like there's new additions, but yeah, I ended up using a lot of the lyrics, and it was very much like, you know, I tried to respect the fact that it was an old song, and where I was at the time emotionally is valid. And yeah, I often have a hard time looking back on lyrics, because, like you said, it's sort of, wow, okay. And you might not even remember what it was about. But the good thing, I'd say, about stuff like that is that it means something different to everyone, and it can change over time, the meaning. So I don't think I didn't have any, like, ooh, that's embarrassing or anything. Like, there was nothing I wanted to badly change,
Well, songwriting is such a personal act, but it's then becomes this public act, right? So I often wonder about this. You know, you often hear about a musician who tries to therapeutically address some loss or trauma in their work. And if all goes well, that song resonates with an audience enough that you could be playing it live for 20, 30 years of just revisiting. Like, in your, you know what it was, sort of where it came from, probably, unless you claim that you don't. Like, some people are like, I don't know where that came from. It just came.
Right.
But what I look for in songs like this, or a project like this that spans, you know, 9 years, if you will, is the people populating the song. So, like, the Searching for You, to me, that song, Searching for You, to me, sounds like a love song. But for you, it could be something different. And the you could be someone totally different than where you are now, you know, like who you were looking for then. You know what I mean? Like, do you have any of that? Do you have any of that stuff?
Sure. I mean, so that song in particular is completely was me trying to do a kind of traditional love song. And but for me, the you in it, like the person or the thing, could be something bigger. So I like to kind of play with that and be like, okay, it could be a person, but it also could be like that feeling or that thing that we're constantly searching for in life that we never quite grab.
Yeah.
Or we don't even know what it is. So just kind of playing with that, that helps me like kind of embrace some of the traditional tropes of songwriting without feeling like it's a useless thing. Like, to me, it has to have something a little bit deeper than, although, you know, at the same time, I love an Everly Brothers love song like as much as anyone else. So I don't know. I think there's value in both.
No, and I'm just trying to get into the artistic mind of like, someone or something has got to me. I'm going to write a song about it right now because it's got to me, but then it lives forever. So these ghosts that you they become, I think, these songs populated by ghosts. Some of them you'd be like, I don't ever talk to that person anymore. We don't we're not connected, but I wrote this song about them. And I think the song still has the feeling. Anyway, I don't want to get into
it. Or that line just came to your head and then you decided to write a song around it.
Yeah. Well, you know? Yeah, like there's a song here called, is it called Lusitania? Am I saying that correct?
Yeah.
Now, I was like, Lusitania, that's a name in the context of this song, right?
Yeah.
But I looked it up, and the two things occurred to me. First of all, it reminds me of The Kids Are All Right by The Who. I'll say that right now.
Nice.
Do you know that song? You're familiar with that song? I don't know if you thought of it melodically, subconsciously, but I'm like, there's something about it. The way it ends even, it's like, da-da-da-da-da. Like, I'm like, oh, it's a little bit of the, do you like The Who?
Oh, I certainly like some of their songs. Yeah.
I think that's the general consensus now. When I was a kid, everyone loved The Who. And now as I get older, I talk to people like, yeah, they're fine, you know? Like,
I mostly like the early singles and I can appreciate the 70s rock god thing that they had going on, but that never hit me. It's sort of like, I think of it as like a thing with a certain era. It's like an age group that I was too young for. It's like people who love Kiss and Cheap Trick and The Who. I can't quite understand it all the way because I missed it.
I don't like greatest hits albums at all. I find them to decontextualize bands. I generally don't like them. However, I think one of my first... Well, my first greatest hits thing that I bought with my own money was actually something called The Beatles Ballads, which was... I bought it at the Kmart, but I did have The Who's Greatest Hits, which I don't know if you know that one, but it's there's like a Union Jack suit or something. Anyway, I had that, and I was quite smitten with it. And I think it had. Have you heard the song "Baba O'Reilly"? Do you know that one?
Yes.
I think it's from the era you don't like, so I just wanted to clarify.
I'm not sure if you're being serious or not. Of course, I've heard.
Sorry,
that song.
It's a bit of a reference to a comedian Joe Pera. I don't know if you know Joe Pera. He was on my show recently. He's an American comedian, and he has... I'll send it to you after, Alex. I'll text it to you or whatever. But he has a sequence on his show where his character has not heard the song Bob O'Reilly before, and he just requests it on the radio over and over again. And the DJ's like, yeah, it's a fairly big song. Anyway, I don't want to spoil it. I'll send it to you. It's just... It is a very unique moment of someone discovering something magical, because that song is very magical. I don't care. Yeah. Like I know what you're saying, but like everything about that song,
it's a journey.
Absolutely. So he's going on the journey for the first time, and you see the song from his eyes for the first time, a song we take for granted. And I just think that's special. Anyway, where was I going with this? I look up Lusitania. It's some sort of ship. Do you know about Lusitania, the ship?
Well, I know about the history of it.
You do, but okay. What is it?
I mean, there's no need to get into that because I used it strictly as a name. Like, it's not... Come on, let's not get into,
I can't help it.
World War history.
No, but when someone names something after something like that, and you're like, Lusitania, what is that? Some sort of... That sounds historical. Then you Google it.
Yeah.
And it's... Is it a ship that sank? You say you don't want to get into it. Forget. It is. Yeah. Okay, so anyway...
It was a ship.
Okay, so then I'm just like, oh, well, he must have... You can't just... Sorry, Alex, I call foul. You can't just randomly pick the name Lusitania out of history.
I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, you can. Anyway, it's just fascinating to me. Like, I feel like the other part of songwriting, I think, whether you know it or not, is you might be writing about interpersonal dynamics, but you're capturing the context. So when I ask if anything strikes you about a 9-year span of songs, and I guess not all of them are that old, right? Some of them are...
No.
Yeah.
I'd say the first half is... all new.
Yeah.
And then in the second half, there are some that were in demo form from a long time ago that were then reworked and added to. Okay. So they all feel new to me, but some of the ideas go way back.
So let's separate you and the songs from a personal dynamic on some level. It's going to be very hard to do. Do you see markers of what was going on in history? In our history, like in the last 9 years, do you see markers of sort of the public space in any of your songs? Something that was going on, chatter. As you know, nowadays, we talk a lot. We communicate a lot about our feelings, our sentiments, about what have you. So as you think of these songs, and I don't want to color this. I don't have any concrete examples. But do you feel that a little bit? Like, do you feel a year when you look at one of these songs, you're like, oh, what the hell is going on in 2016, 2017? Oh, yeah, we were all talking about this, or we were all experiencing this.
Mm. No, I think it's more micro than that for me. It's more, it was more internalized and personal.
Yeah.
It would, these songs are very much, like I said, kind of about the tradition of pop songwriting, and also they're not commenting socially, I suppose, I guess. That's the way I'd put
it. Fair enough. Do you see the change in you? Because I feel like the last time we talked about Mets, or the last couple times, since you've become a father, mm-hmm. as you mentioned. So that changes you. That transforms you as a person, I think.
Yeah, deeply, yeah.
Deeply, yes, fair enough. Yeah. And it changes, I think, your view of the world. Like, the things you probably wouldn't have thought too much about, you now like, wait a minute, I have a little person that's going into this world. Do you see that at all? Do you see pre-dad Alex in these songs and post-dad Alex in these songs?
Yeah, I think in some moments, yes.
Yeah.
Because some of them, like I just said, are very caught up in kind of the minutia and the feelings and relationships. And frankly, I don't think the present day Alex would care about some of those feelings now. But, you know, that's how it is. Like, the things that you care about when you're younger, you can never really understand them as you mature, like, you're like, yeah. Wow, what was I worried about? Or what, you know, I think that happens to everybody. And you go, you know, I was really caught up in something there, but that's life, I think.
It's just a very unique project in this regard. I will say, Alex, like, I don't know if you've thought too much about it, but the fact that these songs, it's your first ever solo venture away from a band that mm-hmm. people know you the most from, but the songs span, almost the duration of the band. So, like, I think, is that
yeah,
right?
Some of them, yeah.
Yeah,
I think the thing to, I'd say, you know, 70% of the songs are pretty fresh. So, yeah, but yeah. I know what you're saying. And I think, you know, you're right. It is kind of, it's a bit of a time capsule thing.
Exactly. And it's not just like you spent this downtime from scratch writing these songs. So, all I'm saying is, this is where I'm coming from. It's just a very unique angle and a unique project in that regard, with different angles that I find fascinating. Because by going back in your hard drives and your archive of songs, you have to do this. It's reflective work. There's no way this isn't reflective, right? Because you're
absolutely
yeah. And so I
absolutely.
Also I
and it and it is mostly. It all comes from from being in a place now where I have, you know, the confidence or the I don't give a shit thing what I didn't have before. Like, I'm so happy to release this music and not second guess it. Like, I love it. I want, and if people love it, that's great. And that's a new feeling for me. I think, you know, putting out music can be really tough in some regards when it comes to, like, self-confidence and I don't know. I'm just at a place in my life now where I have that a different feeling about it. I think I've grown that way, and I'm like I said, just more confident in what I can make and happy to share it, I suppose.
My perception of Mets is that there's a high, high, high commitment to excellence. Everyone really wants everything to be, you know, it's noise infused, but I feel like there's real purpose to whatever Mets does, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But then when I think about...
I believe that.
But when I think about... So your other band is Lids, with Brian Borchardt and Doug McGregor, which I think you released a single... through Sub Pop within the last year and a half or something, right?
We did.
So
with the singles club. Yeah.
Yeah. So all I'm getting at is, when I think of Lids and now when I think of this, it seems like it's not to say that there's less of a commitment to excellence, but I feel like you're embracing looseness and happenstance a little bit more, maybe.
Yeah. It is looser and it is less serious in some regards, but I still think when I'm making something, I do think, you know, you can have an excellent record that is, in an aesthetic that is loose.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so I think I put the same level of work and commitment into it as I would into a Mets record, but it's just a totally different beast. And that was very much the intent.
It's interesting. My wife and I were driving with this on in the van just before you and I got on this call. And she was like, huh, this reminds me of The Replacements. And I was like, oh, hadn't thought of that. A band notorious for being really great, but incredibly loose, you know. So anyway, I think there's a spirit here that people are, I'll say that my wife, that was just something she said, picking up picking up on something that.
You know what? I mean, there's the whole aspect of the fact that, you know, I'm not a professional engineer either. I think plays, there's something, you know, there was an embracing the fact that I was, you know, winging it when it comes to, you know, there's the DIY spirit of I'm going to record it and I want it to sound this way, even if it's not as hi-fi, like knowingly not hi-fi,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That's sort of what was the name of the game, because at first I actually didn't know if it would have a wide release like it's going to have, you know, like I'm still really blown away by that alone. Yeah. But, you know, the spirit of it was just make it. Because it's helping you get through this time,
yep.
And it's making you happy, and maybe it can do that for other people. And hell, let's just say yes instead of saying no.
Yeah. Well, I want to say again, I really appreciate that you made this record.
Thank you.
As you know, I'm a big fan of you and your work, so I'm happy about it. So, what is next per se for Weird Nightmare? It's a very sorry, I didn't really even talk to you about this. Mets just got back from some touring. Is that correct?
Yes, we were just over in the UK.
And how was that for you? I mean, obviously in the context of pandemic stuff, how was it?
It was great. I mean, it was good to get back to it, but touring right now is definitely an intense experience. And we had done a tour in the States that was, you know, we were testing every day and masked up, but that was a couple months ago. Now in the UK, there was zero masks and there were zero mandates, and there was, so it's very different depending on what country you go to. But
is, you know, that good or bad for you? Like every day, a friend of mine or a band I like is canceling a tour, because somebody's gotten ill. Would you prefer, like, and there's increasingly calls from artists saying, please wear a mask when you come to our show.
Yeah.
Are you comfortable? Are you comfortable on stage in these places that have nothing, no protocol?
You know, I want people to be safe. I want people to be, you know, respectful to each other and, you know, the bands. Because as you said, you basically, if you get it, your tour is canceled.
Yeah.
So it's just such a huge risk. I want people to do what they want, but at the same time, I want them, you know, I lean to the side of, you know, mask up and get tested.
Yeah.
And so it was odd to be over there. It felt very different that they were seemingly pretending it wasn't a thing anymore when numbers were skyrocketing, you know. So, but, you know, it was great to be back at it, and the UK is always good to us. So that was cool.
On an anecdotal level, did everyone come back okay? Were you all fine after that experience?
Yeah, yeah. It's okay, funny. Both the tours we managed to no one got it, which is kind of a miracle.
I saw you guys briefly in Edmonton, and I didn't go to the show just out of my own whatever. No, you know what? I always have this apologetic lilt in my voice, and fuck it. Like, I don't... I'm
don't
not
apologize.
People shouldn't... I feel like the well-informed are being viewed as, like, worrywarts, and I'm sick of it, because I'm just like, no, it doesn't make no sense to do some of these things, right? Anyway, my point is, I saw you guys the next day, and actually, I helped... we all went in and were loading out, and we were all wearing masks, and I felt like you guys seemed to have it down. I think, like, you were all wearing, even outside you were wearing the stuff. So
I was
worried about you guys, but you did a great job. So anyway, it sounds like you're doing a great job. Where I was coming from, though, beyond Mets, is there more stuff for Mets coming up? Live shows?
Yeah, there is. We've got some European festivals at the end of the summer.
Okay.
And in between that, I'm doing some shows with Weird Nightmare, which...
Oh, good. Great.
Like, we're doing a show with Superchunk. We're doing some Kiwi Junior shows throughout the summer. So fun stuff like that. Yeah.
I was going to ask. Yeah, I don't... So Weird Nightmare has, like, a Subpop page. Where do people go to learn more about Weird Nightmare and to follow your exploits there, Alex?
Well, weirdnightmare.net is where you can... Canadians can order the album and stuff and get it, you know, cheaper than if you're going to go to Subpop, but... Anywhere else, Sub Pop's good. And they'll have all that. And all the social media stuff, I've got all that too. You know.
Yeah, you're doing the thing.
you know how to do it.
Yeah. Is there a Canadian label per se, or is it just cheaper to order?
It's Sub Pop Worldwide.
Oh, great. Okay, awesome. Yeah. All right, so I haven't done that yet. I'm going to order myself a copy after we're done. So, okay, we've done all the business. Usually I like to go out on a song. As we're speaking, this Weird Nightmare record will be out shortly. Is there a song that you can recommend that we go out on?
Yeah, sure. Let's play Wrecked, featuring Alicia from Bully.
Any particular? Is it just because it has a nice feature? Was there any other reason that came to mind?
I think it's mostly because I was pleased with how that collaboration came together. And I think took the song from a point where I was happy with it to a point where I was really stoked about it. So she added a lot.
All right, let's do this right now. This is from the self-titled new album by Weird Nightmare. This is Wrecked. Alex, thank you so much for being back on my show. And from making stuff that's a weird nightmare. It's a weird nightmare. People will listen to it, and they might have nightmares. We'll see what happens. Anyway, no, it's lovely to chat with you again, and best of luck with everything in the future.
Thank you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Thanks once again to Alex Edkins for returning to this particular podcast. This time, what episode are we at? I've already lost track. I had it written down and I can't remember. What is it? Do you remember? It says somewhere in the thing that it's 687. Sometimes I forget and I lose track. I could probably just record over this, but what the hell? Sometimes Vish makes mistakes, okay? Thanks to Alex for appearing on this, the 687th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you've heard about and you're looking for it, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. That's my website. Also, you can like Creative Control on Facebook or follow the show on Twitter at vishcreative, or you can follow me directly on Twitter and on Instagram at vishkana. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation, which is really the only constant and consistent stream of income for all of this work that I do. It's really appreciated, those of you who do go to Patreon. $6 or more a month grants you access to exclusive content, some of which is derived from these interviews that you're listening to on the free podcast feed. Some of them are derived from my audio archives. I go in there sometimes and I pick stuff out and I post it up there. Anyway, yeah, $6 or more a month grants you access to that. So please go to patreon.com/creativecontrol and support this show with some money. And if you'd like, just for your efforts there and for your support, I've got some Creative Control t-shirts still in stock. And if you'd like one, just message me on Patreon and I'll get you one while supplies last. Thanks again to the fine Alberta record retailer Blackbird Music, which you can learn more about and order things and go to their stores in Calgary and Edmonton if you're in those areas. But anyway, you can learn more about them at blackbird.ca. Also want to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively. They're all located in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. All of them provide in-kind support for this show. Thanks also to Jim Guthrie for lending me some music that I use on the show. Every week, really. Jim, you're the best. You can learn more about Jim, if you're not Jim, at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you so much for listening to this episode with me and Alex. I hope you enjoyed it, and we'll check out his new project, Weird Nightmare, and support Mets however you can. As you may know, if you follow the show, I like Mets, I like Alex, I like all those guys. Also, thanks for subscribing to this podcast or following it and maybe telling your friends to do the same. And spread the word about the show. That's usually how the things pick up. I think people talk about it and they go, oh man, you gotta check out this show. Guy makes mistakes sometimes. Anyway, thanks so much. I will talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.